And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to Tuesday's 9 till noon show. It's just turning 4 minutes past nine on this, the 8th of October 2024, and we are all ready for another busy show, including Community Garda information coming up for you just after 10, the very latest appeals and information from An Garda Síochána, and loads more besides. If you want to get involved in the conversation or raise your own issues, I'll remind you once again of the numbers 086 60 25 000. That's your WhatsApp and text number. If you're outside the Republic, 00 35386 60 25 000. If you want to give us a call, Caroline and Shannon waiting to take your calls on 07491 25 000. And if email's your thing, comments at highlandradio.com. and don't forget, if you're listening on the podcast or our overnight replay, feel free to get involved whenever you're listening. Email comments at highlandradio.com and we pick them up and we can include them on the next show. And if you want to watch the show, feel free to do so. We're streaming live across YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, on your mobile devices, but also on your smart TV and your Fire Stick, if that suits you, wherever you are today. And Facebook, Highland Radio News Sport and Obituary Notices, Highland Hub, and on the X platform, Highland Radio Ireland. So, it's in this day and age, you have to be everywhere, don't you, to reach as many people as is possible. Let's have a look at some of the stories on the front of and inside the newspapers. And we'll start with the Irish Independent today. Their front page story focuses on government concern that Ukrainian refugees are applying for international protection because asylum seekers are provided with better state supports. A recent cabinet committee meeting heard how almost 800 Ukrainians living in Ireland have applied for asylum since August, which senior government officials said needs to be monitored and mitigated. The warning came as ministers debated reducing the welfare entitlements of Ukrainians who are beneficiaries of temporary protection. The cabinet previously agreed to significantly reduce payments for Ukrainians who arrived in Ireland following the Russian invasion. Since September, Ukrainians arriving in Ireland to seek protection from the war and those living in state-funded full-board accommodation are given a weekly payment of €38.80 per adult and €29.80 per child. This is the same amount as received by asylum seekers. Ukrainians were given access to the same welfare rates as Irish citizens when they first arrived. Almost 5,500 Ukrainians then had their supports reduced under the government's plan to bring parity between what is paid to new arrivals and those who came soon after the war. However, the cabinet committee was told of concerns about potential unintended consequences from the change in policy. Issues were also raised about plans to extend the reduced benefits to Ukrainians living in self-catering accommodation where they have to pay for their own food. On to the Irish Times now, and double payments of the state pension and child benefit, along with other cost of living measures, are due to be made by December 3rd under plans expected to go to cabinet today. And I mention this in case there's a lot of people would be planning the Christmas spend based on some of this. The timing of the payments will likely fuel speculation about an early election. 7 of the 10 payments are due to be made before November 22nd, considered by many in political circles to be a probable date for the country to go to the polls. Minister for Social Protection Heather Humphreys is due to bring a memo to Cabinet outlining the delivery dates for the cost of living payments announced in the budget. The first will be an October bonus. That's a double welfare payment for pensioners, carers, people with disabilities and job seekers to be paid the week starting October 28th. During the week starting November 4th, there'll be payments of €400 to working family payments, a disability allowance, blind person and invalidity pension recipients. There'll be a €300 payment to all fuel allowance recipients the same week. The first of two double child benefit payments before Christmas will happen on November 5th, with the second due to take place on December 3rd. People who get the carer support grant, they're going to receive a €400 payment during the week starting November 11th, and there is a €200 payment to those in receipt of the living alone allowance the same week. That is on the week starting November 11th. People getting child support payments, that's formerly the qualified child payment, will receive a payment of €100 per child in the week starting November 25th. And the Christmas bonus double payment for all welfare recipients happens in the week starting December 2nd. So That might be useful information for those of you who might be waiting on that. Sinn Féin covered in all of the papers today, not least the Irish Daily Mail. Mary Lou McDonald has ordered a complete overhaul of Sinn Féin's governance procedures after job references were provided by two party press officers for a former colleague who was awaiting trial for child sex offences. The party has been under sustained political pressure since the scandal emerged. Junior ministers Anne Rabbitt and Jennifer Carroll McNeill last night wrote to Cam Corlett, Sean O'Farrell to make time for statements on the matter to allow Ms. McDonald to update the Dáil. In light of the very serious child protection issues in the public sphere, we believe it is imperative that you exercise your jurisdiction to adjourn the Dáil on this specific and important matter of public interest requiring urgent consideration, they wrote. The pair told him it is a matter for how political parties are governed in this state and the steps they take to correct their own processes, which went very seriously wrong and failed to adequately protect all children on this island from sexual abuse. Just some background. Last month, former Sinn Féin press officer Michael McMonagall, 42, from Limewood Street in Derry, pleaded guilty to two charges of attempting to incite a child to engage in sexual activity and 12 counts of attempted sexual communication with a child on dates from 2020 to 2021. When McMonagall was arrested in August 2021, he was immediately suspended from the party. However, and this is where the timeline is important, he was appointed as communications and engagement manager with the British Heart Foundation. So he was suspended by the party because he was facing charges of child abuse charges, or I want to get the phraseology correct. But in any case, the attempted sexual communications, etc. So he was suspended from the party in August 2021. After that, and this is where there's something serious amiss. After that, he became communications and engagements manager with the British Heart Foundation. That was in September 2022. And last week it emerged he received references from two of the party's press officers in Belfast, which it would be unlikely, I presume, as they are press officers and given his suspension, that they wouldn't know the charges he was facing. But they still gave him references. The pair then resigned after the revelations surfaced. And as it relates to any party, and it has to be fair right across the board, it's reactive, isn't it? They resigned after it all became common knowledge, which is not ideal. You want to see all political parties being proactive and saying, hold on, yep, there's something wrong here. Our governance should have picked this up, and so on. When it emerged yesterday that a major incident was being declared after a bus crash, a school bus carrying lots of children, the worst fears, I think, were triggered for many. A major incident was declared yesterday after a horror smash saw a school bus packed with pupils crash into a field and land on its side. Emergency services rushed to the scene after the double-decker swerved off the road near Carrow Door, County Down. The Northern Ireland Ambulance Service said 43 people and a driver in the vehicle when it crashed. Four were hospitalised. The rest were treated at the scene and able to go home. And it just goes to show, hopefully, the increased safety in buses and people wearing seatbelts and what have you, because this in the past could have been a very, very, very serious event. Rapid response paramedics were deployed to the scene. The air ambulance was also called in as stunned pupils began to stagger from the stricken vehicle after it came off the road at around 5 p.m. Images on social media showed the double-decker on its side in a field, and children described the horrific scenes or sounds and what have you. But thankfully, the majority are okay and four hospitalised, and of course we wish them a speedy recovery. Spygate, the Transport Minister, that's Eamon Ryan, this is in the Sun today, by the way. The Transport Minister has called for the identity of an Irish politician allegedly recruited by Russian spooks, never heard that phrase before, to be revealed. Eamon Ryan said the move would remove any possibility of suspicion being cast on the whole of the Oireachtas, but added that it should be carried out legally. The Sunday Times reported that Russian intelligence is believed to have used a honey trap to recruit the politician during Brexit talks with the aim of undermining relations between Britain, Ireland and the EU. The paper said while the military and security services identified the potential agent, codenamed Cobalt, they remain in Parliament, So he's sitting, or she's sitting in Parliament. Mr. Ryan, the former leader of the Green Party, yesterday said it was a very significant allegation, added, it is a real security concern if you have a member of the Oireachtas acting in such a way. So what's the solution? I think the people deserve to know. I think other politicians deserve to not have that hanging over them. So I don't know, would it be appropriate to use dull privilege? Probably not. I don't know. And on a much lighter note, in the Irish Daily Mirror, I'm sure many of you enjoyed Friday night's Late Late Show. Almost 500,000 of you, in fact, tuned in to watch Patrick Kilty don his Stetson to host the second Late 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 country music special. RTE has revealed an average audience of 476,000 people tuned in to Friday night's special. A spokesperson said it was watched by 46% of the available audience on RTE One. Friday's show has generated over 58,000 streams on the RTE player over the weekend. This weekend, the Late Late Show has had over 14 million video views across all content and 880,000 engagements. Not to be sniffed at. Kieran Noon and Daniel O'Donnell thrilled the audience with their duet, which garnered over 3 million views alone. I didn't see that, actually. But I'm sure it was fabulous. Okay. Now, just before we break, take a break, just a couple of comments to catch up on from yesterday. Prices in shops, says the listener. I was in a shop in Dunloe on Friday. There were a number of items on special price, which I bought. When I got home and I checked the receipt, and I found I'd been charged the full price. I won't be going back there again. I always be a bit cautious of the 3-for-10 offer or the 3-for-15 offer. You know, as they go through, they're priced at, what, $4.99, 5 each. And it's only when the third one goes through the till that the saving is deducted. But you do watch with bated breath. Greg, it's not time to take our soldiers back from Lebanon, says the listener. Instead of trying to ignore that Israel can do what they want, killing innocent people every day, we're supporting these murderers, and our leaders are trying to give the impression that we have to support this slaughter in order to keep our economy. The problem is that the Israeli Defence Forces do not necessarily hold Irish peacekeepers in the highest of regards. They are of the view that Hezbollah was able to move weapons into the area where the peacekeepers are to dig tunnels that go from, you know, South Lebanon to northern Israel, and putting communication networks and all that kind of stuff under the nose of UN peacekeepers. So I don't think really the Israeli Defense Forces are too concerned about the welfare of these peacekeepers. And they're effectively saying, we asked them to move, they're not moving, we're going to continue what they're doing, but we'll try our best to make sure that no harm comes to them. Now, we've kind of heard all that before as it relates to civilians. So if they can get out, I think they should get out at this point. Right, another caller says, as we hold our breaths in horror at what is happening in the Middle East, we know one thing to be true. Until everyone is safe in the region, no one can be safe. Recognising Palestine will set the tone for peace. And that's it, everyone. I mean, there has to be a peaceful resolution, you would hope. Another caller says, I live in a housing estate. I'm tired of asking the council for help. There is a row of houses who have trees blocking their view. People had to move their cars as they were afraid that the trees would fall. The man who owns the house has let the trees block the streetlights. They're blocking the green area too. Can I cut the trees that are blocking the green area? Who's responsible for maintaining the trees? Where can I get help? Where do I stand? So they're in a housing estate. Obviously, one of the houses has let trees grow on their property, but it's blocking lights, blocking views. What can other people in that area do? It's always kind of important to know if these are sort of privately owned properties or public council-owned properties. But any advice there, if you've dealt with that in the past, what did you do? And talking of trees, a lot of people in and around the Letterkenny area very upset to see a large number of trees cut in the cover of darkness. And I'm not suggesting that was for any nefarious reasons, but a number of maple trees chopped down in Letterkenny to make way for a cycle path there and general road improvements with a view to improving traffic. But a lot of people upset that it happened at night time now. There is two sides to that. A, you know, it's controversial, so you do it at night time and then people wake up and it's done and people move on and have to get on with it. Or, which is probably more likely, less traffic, less people out running, walking dogs, cut the trees down and less risk to the public. I suspect it's the second rather than the former. But anyway, this is relating to these roadworks in the Ballyrain area, and the fear is that the oak tree, which a lot of people want to protect, is next. But those beautiful maple leaf trees are gone, which it's just an irony to it, cutting down things that clean the air and help people breathe cleaner air to be replaced by, you know, wider roads and cycle paths and what have you. But anyway, if you've a view on that or anything else for that matter, 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 07491 25000. Very tragic news emerged, and news we're not used to, in fairness, in this part of the world very often. And it's tributes being paid to a Donegal man who was murdered outside Strabane on Sunday night. The dead man, a very popular and well-loved 24-year-old Kyle McDermott, originally from Donegal. Our journalist Michaela Clark is in studio to talk us through how this story developed, Michaela.
Yeah, so Greg, yesterday morning we learnt of the news that the Victoria Road outside Strabane was closed in the Balmagorry area. As the day progressed, then we got the sense that police were dealing with a very serious incident. And then they confirmed that they had launched a murder investigation, and it related to the death of who we now know is 24-year-old Kyle McDermott, as you mentioned, from the Burt area. He had been living in Balmagorry, and he died following an altercation, what police say was an altercation, on Sunday night at around 11:30 in the town. A 24-year-old man has since been arrested. He was arrested yesterday in connection with the murder. He does remain in custody at this time, but police are continuing to appeal anyone who was in the Victoria Road area between 6 p.m. on Sunday and midnight, if they saw anything or anybody who captured any mobile or dash cam footage of the scene, to come forward. You did mention he was a very popular young man. There's so many tributes on social media. He was a digger driver and worked across Northern Ireland in Strabane. And he was the cousin of Strabane Councillor Jason Barr, who, in a post on social media, he says he's devastated beyond words at the death of the 24-year-old. But yeah, as you mentioned, strange news. Yeah, like, I live in Strabane, and it's just strange in that local area at the time.
As you mentioned, a 24-year-old man has been arrested, but investigations are ongoing. So just to heed that appeal once again, obviously, the police are looking to build a case or advance a case. So people, even having heard there is an arrest, should still continue what information they might have.
Yeah, so anyone who was in the area between 6 p.m. and midnight on Sunday, or who may have dash cam footage, they were driving through the area, or if anybody captured anything on mobile, their mobile, to contact police. Yeah.
All right, Michaela, listen, thank you very much for that. We're also joined by Councillor Raymond Barr. Raymond, thank you for joining us this morning. But very unfortunate, isn't it, that we're talking about the terrible, tragic and brutal loss of a young life?
I would say unfortunate is an understatement, Greg. Greg, can I just begin by offering my sincere condolences to Kyle's family, and also the family of his young partner and their friends. But I have to say, it was surreal day waking on Monday morning, the news of the terrible event which occurred in Balmagorry. As I've said to someone else, Balmagorry is a model of a village which could be held as an exemplary village to others, and the death of young Kyle in the manner in which it occurred has shocked the residents of the village and further afield to the core.
And of course, you know, Kyle's family are going to be devastated. His partner and his partner's family, who you'd be familiar with, also devastated by this terrible loss.
Absolutely. There's a feeling of sincere sorrow towards this young man's family and friends, and as I said, also his young partner and her family. However, there's also a feeling of anger for the simple reason that, you know, as far as I'm concerned, Kyle's death was avoidable. It shouldn't have happened.
Can you talk to me a little bit more about that? How how was it avoidable?
Well, as you alluded to, there's a young man custody, and he's being questioned. You know, and although I would like to be more specific about the concerns which I'm alluding to, it wouldn't be appropriate to do so in this case. But all I can tell you is, there's a fear among residents, and the fear is such that a meeting has been requested with the PSNA to discuss their concerns. And, as far as I'm concerned, as far as I'm aware, the request for a meeting has been granted. So, otherwise, date and time is yet to be arranged. But,
and Raymond, can you talk to the residents' concerns, or would you be fearful that could also maybe compromise the investigation?
As I said, I would like to be more specific, Greg. But
and I respect that. No problem.
I suppose the fear of the residents is that something like this could happen again.
Okay.
The residents have got questions, and those questions need to be answered, and they need to be answered as soon as possible.
Okay, right. Okay, we'll leave it there. Okay, thank you very much indeed for that. That's local councillor, Councillor Raymond Barr, and of course we all join in offering our deepest condolences to Colm McDermott's family and wide circle of friends. And of course the ripples run far, and I'm sure are being felt quite significantly with his partner and the wider McGonagall family. And we extend our sympathies and our thoughts to them as well. Okay, in studio with me is Councillor Thomas Sean Devine of the 100% Redress Party. Thomas, how are you?
Not too bad, Greg. It's been a lot better, but it's the same. So
it's been a bit of a whirlwind, I suppose, with the election, the run up to the election, getting elected, getting bedded in, and then being struck down. What happened to you?
Greg, it just started probably, I would say, over about 10 days, just starting to lose power from up above my right hand side of the waist, then down my legs. And it was in 10 days I was from able to be hobbled to be in a wheelchair.
Wow.
Basically, no power gone whatsoever.
Must be returning because you were able to make your own way in and all.
Yeah, that's from my feet, Greg, up to my knees, I would have a good 50% back. But from my knees up, there's still nothing there. It's completely numb.
And what caused it, or what's the...
Greg, up until probably 10 days ago, I thought it was what I refer to as a spinal meningitis, but they've all these big terminology names, it's hard to make out.
We'll both avoid that if possible.
Yeah, okay. And but I was told then, that they were 90% sure it was that, but I would have to be going to Black Rock to get a full diagnosis to confirm what it is. So that's what I'm waiting on.
And the bottom line is really, that's what they suspected is, you don't know what it is, really.
No, and they see the neurologist was baffled. There's two black lines in my spinal cord, which they can't... Usually you see that they told me that within 2 minutes looking at an MRI scan, they could just diagnose you directly. Like, but it's I'm sent halfway, but that's where I'm being sent to.
And do you get treatment, or is it something that works through?
No, steroids. Right. And once the steroid stops, it comes back again. So, as I say...
Yeah, you don't want to, you can't be sure if that's just a false...
Yeah.
Trigger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
you're not really at the bottom of it there.
No,
you,
yeah. I'm not, and Greg, and I'm hoping it's coming very, very soon.
You mentioned a neurologist.
Yeah.
Where did you see the neurologist?
You see, Greg, the problem is there's no neurologist in Leinster County Hospital, and this is where I went in on a Thursday. The neurologist comes on a Thursday, and from the Thursday hobbling into the hospital, the doctors took the decision to start me in a steroid on the Monday, because at that stage it was wheelchair, I was getting my legs, left it on the beds, and it helped under the toilet net. And but the neurologist actually come on the Tuesday. So she had transferred me then to Sligo, where the neurologist ward is. Greg, we need a full-time neurologist in Letterkenny Hospital. We have the highest rate of MS, brain injuries, strokes and whatnot, and we have no neurologist in Letterkenny. You know, that's where... If the neurologist hadn't come that Thursday, I hate to think what state I would have been at that stage, you know. So... I was in Sligo for almost 2 weeks, and I'm telling you, brilliant service. You're full-time with neurologists up there. And they got me back. They've been on a Zimmer frame and sticks, you know, and then I was brought back to the rehabilitation unit down in Letterkenny. Amazing, amazing person. I have to thank Joan and her team down there, because they have, you see me where I'm standing here today, Greg.
You're able to get into that yourself.
I told 6 weeks ago that I couldn't even move back to my own home. My own home wasn't suitable, because I had in a downstairs bedroom, I had in a downstairs washroom. They were him standing the day.
You know, I mean, anyone around here, we none of us live in ivory towers. We all know what goes on in the hospitals, don't we? Because we've been in and out with loved ones in the ED and visiting loved ones in some of these facilities. Given your time in Letterkenny University Hospital, you've gone on now to call for a meeting with the hospital general manager. But what particularly did you observe? What do you want to talk about?
Greg, I've heard all the stories about A&E and all that. And I'm telling you, it's probably only when you experience it yourself how bad it is. And now, as I say, I can't thank the staff enough, Greg, from the cleaners to the porters to them all. Like, they were absolutely amazing. But when I went on through A&E, I was probably fortunate enough that I was straight on their bed. I wasn't hanging about, didn't have to sit all day. And the condition I was in, I think, for the doctors had sent a letter, they knew that there was something serious going on. So I was stood in, and I couldn't believe it, Greg. I went on their bed, and there was an elderly lady sitting in a wheelchair in front of my bed, and I got up conversation with her, and I asked, was she in long? She was sitting in that wheelchair 32 years. Now, this lady was well in their 70s, 32 years sitting in a wheelchair. And I couldn't, Greg, the easiest way I can describe it to people, it's like you'd think it was a wire or something. The wheelchair's down along the corridors. This is in behind the doors. This is not out in the A&E waiting room. Lying down along the corridors, drops hanging everywhere. And some of these people, Greg, was shocking. I couldn't believe that they weren't in a bed or they were sitting the way they were sitting for that length of time, you know.
And were they all different ages?
Different ages, young and old. And a lot of old, Greg, you know. And as I say, I couldn't believe it. So, and I'm not running down on the ground. I'm not running. The staff was amazing. But
when you see the staff did not go to college, university, or wherever they went to treat people in wheelchairs and corridors. No. The fact that they stick it out and do the quality of the work they do makes them even more special to me.
Greg, I was moved over on the ward, DMMU or whatever, across then that night. They moved me into that ward over there. And there was 12, 15 empty beds in it. And I can't understand why these people sitting in trolleys wasn't. But apparently this is a daycare facility and it's used, whatever. But I was moved on it and two other people was moved on it. There's nowhere in 2024, Greg, that people needs to be sitting.
Did you feel guilty?
I did, Greg, that night, because I actually asked that lady, did she want to lie in the bed? And I would have sat in the wheelchair, they let her stretch legs out, and the doctors wouldn't have it, you know, it's...
So she needed a bathroom break or something? What was the procedure? Did you observe that?
You know, no, nothing, it's... What I would say, Greg, was I was in that bed, I wasn't there very long till they moved me over.
I get you, yeah.
That ward, but I mean, it's wrong, Greg, and I've been told when I was on there, my nurses and doctors, when some of them started to realise that I was elected a county councillor, they were coming and asking for help, Greg. They were begging for us to help, even if we could highlight what was going on.
Tell us some of the stories then whilst we have that opportunity.
Like, Greg, I'll get into the one where they say that they no help. The physios was the recent one there. The physios are retired last year, never been replaced. And I asked, what about the recruitment embargo? It was all lifted. They reckon they're recruiting nobody. And so one nurse told me in about handing on the keys to her house, defective concrete block, 7 years left on her mortgage. Handed on the keys, was either that or the rent. Couldn't afford it, Greg. Their wages is not that great. Mm-hmm. So she handed on the keys to her house, 7 years in mortgage. It'd break your heart, some of them, they all come.
At that point, you're just saying, I'm giving up on this. I just can't deal with this any longer.
You know, it's wrong, Greg, you know what I mean? And then the neurologist, she asked me what a big and fight hard to get a full-time neurologist in Letterkenny. There's only so much we can do as elected councillors, but we have to hide it, Greg. We have to have a meeting with this man, and we have to... The people need help, Greg, in that hospital. It's shocking, you know. I don't think it's the money issue is the problem in the hospital, Greg. I think they're just not recruiting staff. The staff is brilliant. They just need more of them.
You'll probably be told that many of these positions are advertised, that they can't attract the talent up to this part of the world. At the same time, a lot of consultants seem to be exiting public health to work in private health. You know, it seems to be an awful lot of that. It's just it'll be interesting to hear what you're told. What was your experience then in Sligo?
Absolutely brilliant, Greg. I couldn't have fault it. Like, I'm telling you, it was from I was took up there in an ambulance, I was brought on there. Staff again, amazing. Anything you wanted, you were looked after. Couldn't have fault them, Greg. And in both hospitals, I mean, the actual staff itself, Greg, they're absolutely amazing. That's the problem that I have, Greg, is there's not enough of them. And it's a problem everybody has, not enough of them, you know. And that's the recruitment needs to be looked at seriously. Fast-track basis. I asked a question yesterday, Greg, I have no aftercare. This is the problem now. Once I was let out of hospital last Tuesday, there's no more physio for me. I'm not walking right. I can't stand on my own 2 feet without an aid. And There's none. That's it. I'm gone. There used to be a case where people with strokes and brain injuries and people like myself, once we were let out, we come back from a 12:30 to 2:30 in designated days, whatever, and we got our physio, whatever. Because there's no physios now, they didn't recruit any more physios, that service is done. So I'm left out into the wilderness now until such times as I get a diagnosis and stuff to get. And that's wrong, Greg. As I say, I stated earlier, we're the highest in the county for MS and the whole lot, and there's no aftercare for people that been out of the hospital.
Yeah, just to put some figures on that, there are 675 multiple sclerosis patients based in the Letterkenny University Hospital catchment area, but they have to travel potentially a 300-kilometre round trip to see a neurologist in Sligo.
Yeah, that's it.
And this has been going on for a long, long time now. It's been raised at the the health forum. Nothing seems to have come of it. And here we are now towards the end of 2024. Yeah. But I mean, the public deserve to know why.
What's Greg, the problem? There's three full-time neurologists in Sligo University Hospital. And they have the neurologist nurses, they have that neurologist ward. And it's amazing, Greg, and you're no longer ill bed, there's somebody else on it. You know, I mean, that's how big a problem this is. And we need a full-time neurologist in Letterkenny Hospital. Now, the neurologist that come down to see me in Letterkenny Hospital, amazing, amazing woman, brilliant woman. And she asked me, she says, the first thing she says, would you please fight for a full-time neurologist? I only come here one day a week. And I can only see so many patients in that one day.
This is what the HSC said about the lack of neurologists. We've completed our own review of neurological services across the entire region from Donegal to Galway in the context of the population needs, and we agree that neurology services need to be developed at Letterkenny University Hospital, and we will be seeking funding. The spokesperson added, getting the funding would be the challenge in getting key appointments that would include two dedicated consultants in Letterkenny Hospital. So the problem is that, the problem here is that we've got the CEO of Sealtha University Healthcare Group saying what you're saying. You know what I mean? Yeah. And we don't really need CEOs who observe stuff. I think we kind of need CEOs that fix things. To say that we need funding, but funding could be a challenge. Why is it a challenge? Like, why is Stephen Donnelly, who is the boss of the HSE, why are people with influence in this area, for an example, not going into him and saying, by the way, we need funding for neurology services right now at Letterkenny University Hospital?
And I'm just talking
Why are we different? Yeah. Why are our outcomes different? Because it's also been determined, and I'm sorry to cut across you, Thomas.
No, go ahead.
It's also been determined, there's an alliance that was established to try and to campaign for this. Patients deserve better. But they say, the alliance is saying that these are doctors that Letterkenny University Hospital should have a daily neurology cover, and there's a significant medio legal risk associated with this reduced cover, and there is enough work. They are arguing for two full-time neurologists as well as the existing neurologist in the Northwest and the supporting team along with them.
Yeah.
So, you know, epilepsy patients, people with MS, the likes of yourself and others. Why do we in Donegal not deserve the same treatment as the people of Sligo, Galway or anywhere else for that matter?
Exactly, Greg, you know what I mean? And it can't be a money issue because we have 24 billion awash this year and you know, the money's there, Greg, and they're not pumping it under the services, you know, and that's wrong, you know what I mean? As you say, two full-time neurologists and the team that comes with or whatever, it should be in that hospital. That hospital's bigger than it was 20 years ago, and yet all the services seems to be getting smaller than it, and it's wrong. Like, that. If you have a cough or sore throat, you're sent to Sligo, the ear, nose, and, you know, it seems to be nothing happens down here. If it's a training clinic,
everything's
moved to Galway or Dublin or whatever. And we're a big county, and we cover a large area around Donegal, Greg, and yet and all people from maybe Glenty's having to travel to Sligo further, but I had to travel.
But even the Sligo teams apparently are under-resourced, Thomas. Do you know what I mean? While they do have their neurologists there and the supporting team, they are not at full whack by any stretch.
Yeah.
And then they're having to deal with the Donegal patients as well.
Donegal patients have been brought up and probably from elsewhere as well. As I say, I'm back up now seeing the neurologist in Sligo on Monday. I have to go back up and visit her on Monday as an outpatient. Again, I'm waiting on my PET scan in Blackrock to be diagnosed. So I was told last Tuesday when I was led out of the hospital I would have that appointment last Tuesday. And now a week later, I still haven't that appointment. And that's 5 weeks I'm waiting that appointment. Now, I stand to be corrected, and I've been told that there's 3 PET scan machines in Ireland. And 2 of them is in private clinics in Blackrock. And I think the HSE has one in, somewhere in Dublin as well. And that's what we have. They run the whole Ireland with these private companies with PET scans, but we haven't even got them ourselves now. This stuff should be all in Letterkenny University Hospital. It should be in every hospital. It shouldn't have to be that we have to travel hundreds of kilometres.
But people with neurological needs in this county feel that they're invisible. They feel they're not being seen.
Not being seen. Until this happened to myself, Greg, I wouldn't have known anything about it or what.
And as well as that too, there are people who need to see a neurologist reasonably regularly, and they're making massive round trips up and down from Sligo. At what point do they say stuff in? Is it worth it?
That's the thing, you see, because the neurologist will travel to Letterkenny one day a week, and they can only see so many patients on that one day. And then that's so if you're unfortunate enough that they don't get to see you, you're waiting to the following week again, you know, because there's only so many beds in Sligo. Whenever I was referred to Sligo, I was actually another week in Letterkenny Hospital before the bed became available for me in Sligo. You know, and by all that time, you're deteriorating, you're not getting the treatment that you need to be getting. Because you're waiting for another bed in another hospital.
Yeah.
Greg, it can't be the case in 2020.
And I hope it's not the case with you that you've kind of semi-identified it, but, you know, the delayed diagnoses as well.
That's
people,
the problem.
People with MS or other conditions not getting on the right medication early enough.
Yeah.
You know, it has very serious potential outcomes for people. And I just want to, and you're doing a good job on that, I just want to emphasise that this has a negative impact on people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like for the rest of their lives, you know, for their well-being and what have you. And I just don't understand, and this is not a political point, I just don't understand why we're less important here, or it seems we're less important.
Greg, everything seems to be less important than Donegal. I'm not going to get into the fact of concrete block issue and every other issue, like, you know what I mean? It's not even that. I have children in the house, Greg, had never seen speech therapists and never seen physiotherapists there for 3 or 4 years. They're nothing there, you know what I mean? Everything seems to have been pushed aside. And especially when COVID started, Greg, you know, all the physiotherapists, all the speech language therapists were all redeployed to other positions, and then they were never brought back again. So we're left now, I think, and recently, at a recent meeting with the Little Angels, and that there were still 14 positions not filled for physiotherapists, speech therapists, and that, and Donegal. And because there's an issue with a few done your...
I think that's actually just in the east. I don't think that covers everywhere, really.
Yeah.
I think it's greater than that.
And as I say, that's not right. Greg, there's people away training, and then why is these people leaving and go to Australia, you know what I mean, and heading to other...
Well, then we learned last week as well, or the week before too, just in terms of, you know, the pressures on the hospital, home care packages, that the funding seemingly seems to have run out in Donegal, that those who've been approved for additional home care are not going to get it. They've been told they can't get it.
There's a
couple of hundred people waiting for home care packages.
Yeah.
That puts pressure on them, the hospital families, you know. But these waiting times, these funding issues are not present in Dublin, where there's millions of people. And yet here in the Northwest...
That's a wait. And, you know, that's a long waiting time, Greg. And I'll tell you, it's longer when you don't know your diagnosis. You know.
And I wonder, too, you spent an awful lot of time taking up a bed. You probably needed to. But, I mean, I wonder if we had a neurologist in Letterkenny, you could have been discharged to home maybe after scans or what
after
have you.
Greg,
you know, you probably would not need to have stayed in the hospital as long as you did.
No, and I brought this actually up with my physiotherapist, Greg. You know, I felt as I was taking a bed up, I love 2 minutes from the hospital.
Yes.
I had my physiotherapy in the morning and a wee bit of OT then. But the rest of the day I was there and I felt, you know, I could come down here in the mornings and do this and go back home. There's a bed there for somebody else. But once you leave that bed, Greg, you become an outpatient. I'm an outpatient. I have no care now. And this is the problem. If there was more physios not there, there's probably people, Greg, doesn't need to be staying, especially if you love locality to the hospital where it's only a quick nap down the road. Do your physio and that and go back home. There'll be more beds freed up. There's more staff here to look after patients and that, you know. And this is what I had the conversation with the physio, and she says, once you leave this hospital as an outpatient, she says, you're done. And it's wrong, you know what I mean? Because I do need a lot of physio. Like, she's given me stuff to do at home. But doing it at home, Greg, is not
the same. I know your muscles have to be built back up again.
Doing it at home is not the same as somebody professional showing you, pushing you to that limit, and it's wrong, Greg.
A caller says the hospital has been like this for years. My husband waited 7 hours in the hospital as a cancer patient as they did not have a hospital bed. The staff are brilliant, but the management aren't helping. Cancer shouldn't be paid to sit on the hospital's forum board as they are doing nothing to help. And I don't believe that to be the case. I think the likes of Thomas here, as an elected rep, he's calling for a meeting with the hospital's general manager. In reality, will it resolve anything? Possibly not. Will we get some answers? Maybe.
Maybe.
But what else can be done? Because this is happening for a very, very long time. Every now and again, we expose what goes on behind the doors like you have today. But really, at what point do the powers that be step up, those with influence, and say enough is enough?
Has to be, Greg, because I say, I'm a man of my word, and I give these nurses and doctors and physios and that my word that I'll do my best for them. And if I had a camp outside that hospital, do we get answers? Do we get actions done? Well, so be it, we'll do it. It's wrong, Greg, and I'm telling you, if it's a money problem is in the hospital, there's 24 billion circulating around the country. It shouldn't be. People's health should be put first.
We heard from the HSC that funding these positions could be an issue.
It can't be, Greg. If that's the only hold up, Greg, we'll be pushing for funding and we'll get it done.
All right, some of those answers are a couple of months old, but that just talks to how long this has been ongoing in many areas, but not least in terms of neurology. Right, Councillor Thomas Sean Devine, listen, continued recovery. It's great to see you back up on your feet, albeit with your two wee friends. But hopefully now you get the diagnosis, because you want to know precisely what it is, don't you?
It's an unknown.
And then from there, you can really crack on with your recovery. But we hope it all goes well, and I'm sure it will.
Thank you very much.
All right, Thomas, that's Councillor Thomas Sean Devine. Anything to say on that? Let us know. 086 60 25000. I'm joined on the programme now by Park Shevlin. Good morning, Park. Thanks for your time. Thanks for taking the call.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, you've been highlighting the chopping down of these maple trees in Ballyrain, and I suppose many people feel the oak tree must be next. It seems counterintuitive in this day and age to see these beautiful mature trees being felled.
Yeah, so this kind of kicked off last Sunday week in terms of I was talking to a friend of mine that was they were informing me about them extending the cycle lane over past the oak tree, over past the maples in front of Georgie's, and asked for a bit of help around the campaign around it. So I kicked off an online campaign, and then Mary T got wind of it, and she came on board and sponsored some leaflets and stuff last week and got them distributed last Tuesday evening. And then we had a meeting last Wednesday. There was approximately about 70 people there. And we just, basically what we were looking for was the council to engage the community in relation to what was going to happen here. So then Noel Foley had, from Antashka, had been involved. And this is for the proposed cycle lane and the Greenway, part of the Letterkenny Activity Travel Project. But it threatens the existence of the oak tree and now what was known as the maple trees, which unfortunately were pulled down last night in the dark of night. The locals, supported by ourselves, are justifiably worried then about the council's decision in terms of the value of our natural heritage and how the oak tree and the maples are part of our ecosystem.
I think with the loss of the maple trees, with the maple trees, does that mean really there's no hope to retain the oak? Because at the end of the day, they're cutting these trees down to make way for the plants that they have, and they can't just stall at that oak tree.
No, well, at the minute we have had unconfirmed reports that they will engage with the community in relation to the oak tree, whatever about the maples, which were now gone, but We're waiting on official word back in that. So there was a couple of letters we've done there over the weekend in response to the overwhelming support we've had on the petition. We're almost at 1,200 signatures there as of last Sunday week. So there's a lot of people concerned here. Mainly, I think it goes back to the council were talking about in 2020 that they had a consultation with the public in relation to us, and there was no objections. And that's not evident from what we're seeing in terms of the response to the petition. We've 1,200 people objecting there now. And I suppose then they sent out on 16th of July a consultation again in the Radisson for 3 years on the 17th of July from 3 to 7. Like, who has a consultation from 3 to 7 on a Wednesday afternoon?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in terms of a walkway or a greenway or a cycle lane or any of the above. Like,
Were you also given information, Pádraig, that there is a natural threat to this oak tree, not just maybe from men chopping it down?
Yeah, well, that only came to light last night. Well, I was only informed of it last night in terms of that they're saying that there is a particular issue with a hole in the middle of the tree.
Uh-huh.
And that would need to be seen to. So apparently they had the rain's getting under the centre of the bark and it needs to be treated. And they had a tree surgeon looking at it and they said in order to save it would need to be sealed at the top.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean that's not out of the way. It's not impossible. Let's do it. Like, this tree's 90 years old. They have a lifespan of up to 500 years. Part of the natural heritage of the area. It looks beautiful. It's fantastic. It's good for people's mental health. It provides a lot to the environment in terms of oxygen and support. So, I mean, we don't want to see it being pulled down. And we didn't want to see it being pulled down either.
Have you any assurances, Pádraig, that you won't wake up one morning and it's gone?
Absolutely none, other than word of mouth that we were informed that there would be negotiations or there would be a consultation, a further consultation around the oak tree.
Okay.
But as you say, that's unconfirmed. I haven't received nothing, and as far as I'm aware, none of the other campaigners have received anything official. Uh-huh. To say that that's the case. So we currently await word back on those three, if not four, letters went down over the weekend to the county council and all the councillors and all their associates in relation to this.
Right.
So we await word back on that.
And are there councillors actively backing this campaign?
Currently at the minute, we've had some apologies from particular councillors that weren't able to make the last Wednesday or last night. I'm not going to start getting on the names of individuals, but they're fully aware of it, and they've all been copied on all correspondence in relation to it.
Okay, Pádraig.
The only one is the current candidate, Mary T, that came out and supported it on the back of the petition and supported the leaflets and stuff.
Okay.
And arranged the meetings. So.
Pádraig, listen, thanks for your time this morning. I do appreciate it. I know you had to make space for us, so it's appreciated. That's Pádraig Shevlin there, who is shocked, like many are, that the maple trees have now gone. And the fears that oak tree in Ballyrain, Letterkenny, could be next.